I'm joined on the line with Todd Fletcher, a 9/11 researcher who has worked with Professor David Ray Griffin, internationally recognized as the preeminent scholar of the September 11th attacks. Todd, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
Todd, if you would, give our listeners some background information on yourself, how it relates to 9/11 and to the author of this book we'll be discussing today, Cognitive Infiltration, and why you're here and not Professor Griffin.
I was skeptical of the official account of 9/11 from very early on and paying close attention to information as it came out. And I did some writing in 2001 and 2002 about the events. Then when David Ray Griffin's first book on 9/11 came out in 2004, The New Pearl Harbor, I wrote to him, told him how highly I thought of the book, and his response was to invite me to assist him on his very next book on 9/11, the 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions. For that book, I read the text closely and spotted typos and just helped him make the text better. I wasn't the only person doing that. He's been wonderful at inviting people to help him on his works. And anyway, I've now helped him for the last 6 years with 8 of his 9/11 books. The reason you're speaking to me is that he has had some major health problems and he's recovering from major surgery, and he actually had complex multiple surgeries, and he's not in any condition right now to take interviews. So because I assisted him on this most recent book, Cognitive Infiltration, he asked me if I would do interviews for him, and I am happy to do so.
Thank you for explaining that. And what's the prognosis for Professor Griffin?
The prognosis is very good. He's home from the hospital and he's strengthening rapidly, but he's going to need some months, I believe, before he's fully functional and back to his usual productive self.
Prolific self, right? And
that's
good news that he's recovering, because we need him and we need you to continue what you're doing.
Yes,
very important. Okay, the book's full title is Cognitive Infiltration, an Obama Appointee's Plan to Undermine the 9/11 Conspiracy Theory. Now, this is Professor Griffin's, what, 9th book on 9/11?
It's his 9th monograph on 9/11. He also has a couple of edited volumes, but this is his 9th book.
Okay, the book is a response to a paper co-authored by a fellow by the name of Cass Sunstein, and the paper was titled Conspiracy Theories. Now, Sunstein is a professor of law at Harvard Law School, and actually he's on leave right now from Harvard Law School while serving as one of President Obama's many czars. He's the czar of the Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. In Cognitive Infiltration, Professor Griffin, who was greatly assisted by you, as we mentioned earlier, and he mentions that in the acknowledgement section of this book, wonderfully dissects Sunstein's paper on conspiracy theories and reveals it for what it is, anti-intellectual propaganda, and that's all it could be. Can you give our listeners a synopsis of Sunstein's paper, Conspiracy Theories, and why you think it is that he co-authored it? And of course, it should be noted also that Sunstein has some rather unconventional views on marriage, taxation, the First Amendment, and others.
This article, Conspiracy Theories, it actually came out in two different forms. He posted it online in January 2008. Both versions, both the one that he posted online in January 2008 and then the later published version from June 2009, that one was published in the Journal of Political Philosophy, an academic philosophical journal. Both versions are co-authored with another Harvard Law professor named Adrian Vermeule. The two versions differ somewhat. The earlier one that was posted online and that people have access to, you can Google Sunstein Conspiracy Theories and a link will come up for this earlier version. That one's a bit longer, so it was cut down and edited for the published version. In between the two versions, Obama selected him as his information czar, appointed him to be head of the White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs. So presumably, President Obama knew about his views on the subject. The reason David Ray Griffin wrote a book about this article, it's unusual for a scholar like David Ray Griffin to write an entire book on just an article, but the reason he did is because the article is very alarming. Essentially, I need to get right to the core of it here. It calls for the government to launch a program of infiltration, specifically of 9/11 truth conspiracy groups. The article purports to be an analysis of all kinds of conspiracy theories, but really the main focus and principal example, as Sunstein says, is the 9/11 truth conspiracy groups, and he calls for a program of infiltration infiltration of these groups to break them up in a process that he calls cognitive infiltration. So it's an alarming COINTELPRO-like illegal program that he calls for, and he does it in this academic language. This article published in an academic journal, it purports to be a philosophical analysis of conspiracy theories. The later version published in the Journal of Political Philosophy has a subtitle, so that the full title is Conspiracy Theories, Causes and Cures. So he claims to be analyzing what causes conspiracy theories to spring up and then asserts that they need to be cured. And the fact is, though, that the article is deeply flawed. It's not a very good scholarly article. And although Sunstein is considered to be a preeminent legal scholar by his peers, apparently he's the most frequently cited legal scholar in the country, the article is deeply flawed. And Griffin, in his analysis of it, shows that he's got undefined terms, doesn't back up claims with any evidence. He has bogus scholarly citations where the articles that he refers to actually do not support his argument, and then internal contradictions in his argument. So Griffin, with his own intellectual capabilities, is able to lay out the structure of the argument and then show that each step in Sunstein's argument is deeply flawed in one way or another. And then, of course, the most alarming thing is that this constitutional scholar, Sunstein, is calling for an unconstitutional abridgment of free speech by attempting to break up fully legal organizations of people who are investigating the 9/11 events.
It's pretty amazing. I found that his theses are so thoroughly ridiculous. It's easy to see why Professor Griffin approached it the way he did.
He defines conspiracy theory in a way that makes it impossible for the government's conspiracy theory to qualify. So that's one of the first things that he does to set up his argument, is to claim that conspiracy theories are theories that blame powerful people for heinous events. And because the government blames these powerless, poor Arab hijackers whose leader is based in a cave and who themselves don't control the levers of any state or any state agencies, these clearly don't qualify for the full label of conspiracy theory. It's one of his sort of subtle dodges. His analysis of the 9/11 alternative conspiracy theory, the 9/11 truth alternative, that the government was deeply implicated in the events, that it was most likely an inside job, that because he doesn't successfully refute any of the major evidential claims of the 9/11 truth alternative conspiracy theory, that he must be aware that it is in fact been unrefuted, and that's because there is no real evidential base to refute it on the part of the government, so that the government is false and the 9/11 truth theory is true. And I think that as you read Griffin's analysis, you can see that there is this ambiguity in the article. It's very complex. The article is complex, and of course Griffin's deconstruction of it is complex. So there are these ambiguous qualities to it that remain puzzling to all of us after having read it.
Now, the book's terrific. It should find its way into the hands of every interested global citizen. It presents so much evidence that the government's official 9/11 conspiracy borders on the preposterous. And even though many of these points have been introduced over the years, this book is very concise, and it somehow seems to touch on all of them. And of course, we can't go through hardly any of them because of time constraints. But one of the important parts to the book is that, and you were mentioning the alternative 9/11 conspiracy theory. That would be the 9/11 truth movement, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And he shows on page 31, he shows, and you show, because you worked on the book also, that the people who are involved in the 9/11 truth movement are anything but the type of people that Sunstein wants to protect the government and its citizens from. People that are scary, hiding behind their keyboard, want to go out and kill people who work for the government, architects, of course, engineers, intelligence officers, journalists, lawyers, medical professionals, pilots, political leaders, religious leaders, scientists, veterans. So these are just regular people who want to get the truth out. And another very important part of the book is the fact that the so-called free press will not let it happen. And this is a topic that fascinates me, and it fascinates a lot of people who listen to these type of programs. How is it that the entire mainstream media can almost unilaterally and in such a cohesive fashion ignore all of this evidence?
It's really a mystery, although we know now that the mainstream media, and especially the largest media corporations, are increasingly concentrated in terms of ownership, that there are fewer and fewer independent media outlets out there, and furthermore, that as they become concentrated, they become bigger and bigger and larger corporations, climbing the corporate scale. So there seems to be a uniform policy on the part of the major media not to delve into these questions, and one can interpret that in various ways, and I have a fairly hardline understanding of it myself. That is, I think that the media is colluding with the government in this area, but that's a personal opinion. Actually, David Ray Griffin wrote another excellent book called 9/11 Contradictions, an open letter to the media and Congress, and he wrote an entire book simply directed toward journalists in the hope that they would begin to look at it. And the way he did that was he simply looked at contradictions in the official account. That is, where one agency said one thing and another government agency said the exact opposite, or where the government story changed over time. Contradictions within the official account, these would be fair game for any investigative journalist, irrespective of any questions of conspiracy. You know, simply, why would the government say this at this time and say the exact opposite at this time? But the book was never reviewed in a single media outlet. So the media is avoiding the kind of in-depth information that we expect from it. And this is part of Sunstein's argument. He claims that the purveyors of conspiracy theories, and he uses the word purveyor like that, that they're informationally isolated, that they're able to concoct these crazy theories because they're just sort of cut off from the vast amount of information that our wonderfully open society and our free press makes available. And so they're concocting weird, distorted understandings of the world based on limited information. One of David Ray Griffin's reasons for listing all of those organizations of different types of professional people who've organized to express their concern about the official explanation of 9/11, as you mentioned, architects, engineers, veterans, pilots, retired military officers, etc., all these different groups, is that these are not informationally isolated people. These are highly credentialed, highly capable, highly experienced, responsible people in many different professional areas that are not cut off, who have access to the universe of information. And of course, the internet is the principal source that we all have. And this takes us out of whatever informational isolation used to exist. We're all globally connected with access to illimitable information instantly. And some very fine minds have pursued these questions with vast amounts of information and high capabilities to analyze it. And they're very concerned and they're starting to organize and demand a genuine investigation. So his characterization of 9/11 truth members is completely false. We are highly informed people.
Right. The exact words were embedded in isolated groups. It's even funny reading this.
It is.
Gotta stop laughing. Embedded in isolated groups. And this is the interesting part of it. This is what I was alluding to before. Embedded in isolated groups or small self-enclosed networks in which they are exposed only to skewed information. Isn't Sunstein or Sunstein, however you say his name, isn't he just describing himself and his cohorts?
Yes, you know, I think that's right. And he talks about the writings of conspiracy theorists as deselecting information that runs counter to their biased perspectives, when in fact that's precisely the way in which the official publications have treated the issue of 9/11. The 9/11 Commission report, David Ray Griffin's book, identified 115 lies of omission. That means that information was not there, or distortion. The evidence was distorted. He calls the whole book a 571-page lie. The same with the two sets of reports on how the towers at the World Trade Center came down that were published by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. First, they published in 2005, I believe it was, they published a report on how the two towers, 1 and 2, came down. And then finally in 2008, after years of delay, they published another report on WTC 7, the 47-story building that came down into its footprint in 6 seconds at 5:20 in the afternoon and had never been struck by a plane. And both of these publications by NIST systematically excluded all kinds of evidence, as well as distorting evidence and making up and presenting fraudulent false evidence. So these are the people, the defenders of the official account, who are most guilty of these sins of isolating themselves from reality and presenting a false view of the world.
Right. One of the funniest parts of Sunstein's argument is where he claims that, yeah, the government might be involved in conspiracies. He mentions a few of the more prominent ones, and he leaves off the other ones. And on page 12 in Cognitive Infiltration, the book we're talking about, Professor Griffin points out that there are in fact many instances where the government was involved in conspiracies. And
yes.
He gave what he called a selective list
yes.
of illegal and or nefarious operations by the U.S. government, some of which were directed against the American people, some not, that it tried to keep secret. Operation Mockingbird, NATO and CIA operations in Europe, regime change in Iran, regime change in Guatemala, so on and so forth. There's several more of them. But then he goes on to say that although this list is significant, it constitutes only a small portion of the U.S. government conspiracies since World War II. How is it that the mainstream media, I keep getting back to them,
mm-hmm.
how is it that the mainstream media can so effectively and in a monolithic fashion, in a conspiratorial fashion,
mm-hmm.
just ignore these stories that, as you said, would be fodder for an investigative journalist? Is it because they need access from the government?
Well, that's the standard explanation. You know, I hear the one about needing access. They need to maintain their chummy relationships with the White House or with the Pentagon or whatever. So for a reporter to maintain his sources, you know, keep his leaks going or whatever, they have to remain on friendly terms so then they never say anything that their sources would dislike. That's a fairly standard rationale. However, one of the operations that Griffin lists here, one of these conspiracies that he lists, in fact, the first one that you mentioned, Operation Mockingbird, this is now a well-examined and understood operation. It's a CIA operation in which the CIA installed operatives in all the major media outlets in the country, all the major newspapers, all the TV networks. They actually have in-house CIA employees who are influencing the policies of those agencies. This is well attested, and your listeners can simply Google Operation Mockingbird, and they'll find all kinds of information. I think Bob Woodward actually wrote a book about it, or someone did. It's well known that the major media outlets have in-house CIA operatives that maintain a smooth coordination between the government-generated information. And, of course, Cass Sunstein's been appointed the information czar. The government's very conscious of the kind of information that it puts out, right? It spins things after they happen, as they happen, before they happen. There's all kinds of information manipulation.
Right.
And part of it depends upon the press going along with it. So, for example, you'll see it's openly admitted. The New York Times will publish stories about revelations in Afghanistan or Iraq wars, but then they'll say that the government has asked us not to reveal names here or certain details. You know, they'll admit that the government has told them before they publish the story that they can say so much but don't include specific details. And this crops up all the time. So you can see that there's a continual flow of direction from the government to these media outlets. Then you can examine, say, the New York Times and look at its policies, the New York Times editorials, which defend the right of the president to assassinate U.S. citizens without due process. There's a recent editorial in the New York Times. I don't know if you noticed that one.
No, I try to stay away from the New York Times, but go ahead.
Yeah, so it's very, very cozy with the executive, I would say.
Yeah, Operation Mockingbird began in 1948, so they pretty much jumped on the bandwagon, well, a year after they were created, of course, the CIA officially in 1947, but just
right.
when, I guess, TV started to come on the scene. That, I think, is the most startling aspect of the book, page 73, the changing the story. That scares me, and the reason it does is because you can have an account of something, and then because the account is faulty, because
mm-hmm.
evidence is introduced later on that shows the account to be a farce, then the government can actually feed information to this mainstream media, which simply regurgitates it as
right.
if it's authentic. And that's the problem. I thought the country that we were living in was a country where if evidence was presented, then people would stand up and take the evidence and give us the truth. But it seems like it's run by now what's almost like an oligarchy of companies and former politicians, and they're treating the American public like kindergartners.
I agree. I think that it's undermining democracy in the country. Not only are we not presented with information, or we're presented with disinformation by our principal media outlets, even if the American public then, by using other sources, say the internet or something, realizes that a main principal government policy that the media is supporting is counter to the public interest, and a large percentage of the public decides that they're against it. I'm thinking, for example, of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Right.
And if as a response they throw the bum out and elect a new person, President Obama, who runs on an anti-war ticket, and they elect him and sweep the Democrats back into power, and then there's no change in the policy, so that Obama retains the defense secretary and expands the drone attacks in Pakistan 4 or 5-fold, starts attacking new countries, so that the anti-war candidate turns out to be indistinguishable, except maybe worse than President Bush had been. It doesn't look very much like a democracy. It doesn't look like the government is responding to the popular will at all. It is a very frightening situation where the information is controlled, the policies are monolithic, there seems to be a trend. You ask, what kind of a country do we have? I think the word fascism needs to be in our lexicon. Plutocracy needs to be in our lexicon. Now, I'm speaking here personally. I don't know if David Ray Griffin would make these points.
It really doesn't matter, because
you're
the guest. So
thank you.
Sure, of course. And personally, I agree with, unfortunately, what you're saying. I wish it wasn't the case. And I think you're right on the mark with that. Another important point of the book, and there are so many, but on page 72, the degenerating research program.
Yes.
That's very important, because as you guys say here on page 72, that the 9/11 truth movement has proven to be a remarkably fruitful and hence progressive research program. And of course, say later on, the very fact that Sunstein felt a need to write this essay, providing a proposal for undermining the movement, suggests his awareness that its research program is progressing, not degenerating. And the scary part of all this is that on page 17, Sunstein's proposal for dealing with the 9/11 truth movement involves using anonymous government agents and secretly hired experts to infiltrate it. So if you could explain to the listeners what the degenerating and the progressive means, and then deal with my final point.
Yeah, his claim is that the 9/11 truth movement is a degenerating research program, but a degenerating research program is one in which all kinds of evidence comes out that tends to disprove or to counter the theory. But in fact, the evidence is all on the side of the 9/11 truth alternative conspiracy theory, and it is truly a progressive one where more and more evidence comes out and fills in the gaps and provides some missing pieces of an ever more clarifying puzzle. And the official theory about Al-Qaeda and the hijackers and all of that is the degenerating one. And now the situation is no one will defend the official theory. It's very difficult to find anyone who will publicly stand up and defend the official theory. There have been many attempts by the 9/11 truth movement to organize debates with defenders of the official account. Popular Mechanics was approached. NIST was approached. NIST was offered the opportunity to defend their publications on television with all expenses paid, with very highly civil and respectable people like David Ray Griffin himself on the side of the 9/11 truth theory, and with anybody they would like to defend their work from NIST to come on, they've systematically refused. So furthermore, Cass Sunstein, in the construction of his argument, he claims that there's no point in the government attempting to defend its account because the 9/11 truth activists are biased. He calls them biased assimilators. He used very Orwellian language throughout the book. So the 9/11 truth activists are biased assimilators who would be even more biased with any kind of information coming from the government itself, so that there's no point in defending the position of the government in an open public forum. Right. And because there's no point in defending it publicly, the only option left to the government is to try to break up the groups surreptitiously. So it's really quite a remarkable admission. It's the opposite of what he claims. The degenerating program is the one that the government can can't even find anyone to defend publicly.
Right.
And the progressive one is the one that they're afraid of because of the potential harm that the 9/11 truth theory poses to government projects. This is the language of Sunstein. He calls 9/11 truth activists extremists. He says that they're dangerous, violence-prone, likely to undertake terrorist acts. Another one of his claims is that they're harming government projects by undermining public support for the government. So clearly, I think they're worried about the changing attitude on the part of the public toward the war. 9/11 was the pretext for the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. And as the truth gets out about 9/11, people are saying, well, gee, we shouldn't be there. Support for the wars is plummeting rapidly. You know, they're very concerned about it. So I don't know if that rambling response addressed all the things you wanted me to.
A couple of things that stand out. One is that this guy, Sunstein, it's scary. The Cass is in a position to influence public policy, and his prescription for dealing with this horrible 9/11 truth movement is to use anonymous government agents and secretly hired experts to infiltrate it. Is this guy serious?
Yeah, I think he's serious, yes.
Okay, excellent, yeah.
And he's a constitutional scholar in calling for an unconstitutional COINTELPRO-type operation. This is not legal to do things like this. This is what they did back in the late 50s and 60s to anti-war groups and civil rights groups, socialist, communist groups. They infiltrated them, and back then, a lot of times, these led to violent quarrels between members of the groups. What they did back then was sow rumors about people so that they couldn't trust one another any longer. But he's clearly calling for precisely the same thing. He's also calling for attempts to sow doubt about the facts and to provide alternative interpretations of the facts so that people no longer feel like they have a consensus around what the facts suggest.
Right. That's real-life Mission Impossible stuff.
Yeah, definitely. So here we have a high government official calling for an illegal operation, a legal scholar calling for an illegal operation, a constitutional scholar calling for an unconstitutional operation, and a preeminent legal scholar writing a deeply flawed article that is such a piece of junk academically. One wonders, how did it get published? It's so bad. The universities are also full of CIA agents.
That's why I said earlier, was it ever the country that we thought it was? And probably the answer to that is no, it never was the country that you thought it was.
No, I don't think it was. I think starting after World War II, with the creation of the CIA, the NSA, the NSC, all that, whatever it was, Truman was the fellow who started all these up. It seems that that was the creation of a secret government, and we've lived our entire lives imagining that we lived in a democracy, an open society with a free press. When things like the Kennedy assassination and the Martin Luther King assassination, when those things happened, we thought these are horrific events, but we rolled over and went back to sleep. 9/11 is when they really made it very, very plain that we have to not go back to sleep. We need to wake up and dig as deep as we can to figure out what the situation really is.
Exactly. Absolutely. They overplayed their hand this time, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Today's election day. And when you were speaking a little bit earlier, you made me think of how a lot of people are probably extremely disappointed in how the Obama presidency has unfolded.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the Democrats getting thrown out and the Republicans coming in, that's a farce anyway, right? A fellow used to say they're opposite sides of the same wooden nickel. So it's kind of ridiculous.
That's a good one.
Obama, what a huge, huge disappointment. We're going to get out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan. As you stated earlier, it's just the opposite. Putting someone like Cass Sunstein in this office, Obama isn't the president that we thought he was going to be, and the country is not the country that we thought it was. We're living in a place that we really should not feel too comfortable about, because every word we say, every word we write is being absorbed.
Yeah, databased.
Mm-hmm. Databased, analyzed, tagged. As you said, after World War II, that's when it started. Now, I just want to make one final point about the book. One of the reasons the book is so important, and we mentioned before that, it's kind of like an encapsulation of many of the other books.
Mm-hmm.
On page 52, Unjustified Because Devoid of Evidence, that's really where you guys start with. I mean, look, I'm saying this to the listeners. If you haven't yet done your research when it comes to the alternative views of 9/11 or the alternative conspiracy theories, because they're all conspiracy theories, as plainly pointed out in the book. Pick up this book, Cognitive Infiltration. If you don't think you could stomach reading the whole book because it's going to keep you from something else, go to page 52 and start looking at all the evidence. If someone would read this, 52 to page 72.
Yeah, it's a very succinct presentation of the major lines of evidence. The book, however, itself is not long. The text is only 155 pages. It has about 45 pages in notes or something and a nice index. So it's one of David Ray Griffin's shorter books. It's very well written, and it would well repay any of your listeners' time to read.
Well, they need to read it because they need to get up to speed here if we're going to actually get the country back the way that we thought it was.
Yeah, we've really got a battle on our hands, I'll say that.
Absolutely. Now, if they want to get the book, where would they go for that?
The best place to go, the easiest place to go, is Amazon. You get it quickly, and it's at a reduced price. You can read the 34 or 5 reviews that have been written there to get a feeling for the book. That's where I would go to get it.
Okay, Cognitive Infiltration, An Obama Appointee's Plan to Undermine the 9/11 Conspiracy Theory by David Ray Griffin. That's Olive Branch Press, an imprint of Interlink Publishing Group. Todd, your website, you're a blogger.
I blog at 911blogger.com. That's just 911blogger.com. And this is a site that's set up for people to present information or their research or their writings or their projects. So it's just common folk blogging there. My name, Todd, is spelled with one D. And another site that I'm associated with that I put new information up at is called wanttoknow.info. And this, by the way, is the site that David Ray Griffin first explored in detail when he was first starting to look at the events around 9/11. And there's a marvelous timeline there that lays out news stories that contradicted the official account. And Griffin found that there and worked with that. So wanttoknow.info is an excellent 9/11 site.
Okay. I wanted to mention it was very impressive when you wrote to Professor Griffin and he replied to you and asked you to come and do research with him.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful. You know, I guess he liked my letter and he just said, how would you like to read my next book in progress and make comments? So I said yes, and now he's kept me busy for the last 6 years. He's amazingly productive. Some years he's written two books. Two books have come out in 1 year. That's happened a couple of times.
Wow.
And so I'm used to getting large Word docs in my inbox and just set right to them as soon as I get them and try to keep his schedule operating properly. I hope we do more of that. I hope he gets back to his productive mode soon.
Well, he's gonna, right?
Oh, yes, I think so. Yeah.
Good. Todd, I really enjoyed myself.
I enjoyed it too.
Thank you. You're very important to this movement. You're very important to, obviously, democracy and a lot of other things. And you're a brave man for doing this. I want to thank you for everything you're doing, for the time.
Thank you so much.
The time you're spending to produce the evidence. It's very important.
Really appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your time. And
you're welcome.
Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, take care now.